Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Affle 3i Limited Q4 and FY25 earnings conference call, hosted by DAM Capital. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anmol Garg from DAM Capital. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Manav. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of DAM Capital, we welcome you all to Q4 and 12-month FY25 conference call of Affle 3i Limited. I take this opportunity to welcome the management of Affle 3i Limited, represented by Mr. Anuj Khanna Sohum, who is the Chairperson, MD, and the CEO of the company, and Mr. Kapil Bhutani, who is the Chief Financial Officer of the company. So before we begin the discussion, I would like to remind you that some of the statements made in today's conference call may be forward-looking in nature and may involve some risk and uncertainties. Kindly refer to the slide 26 of the company's earnings presentation for a detailed disclaimer. I now hand over the call to Mr. Anuj Khanna Sohum for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, Anuj.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the call today. I trust all of you are keeping in good health. It is with immense pride that on April 5th, 2025, Affle stepped into its third decade of transformational growth as Affle 3i Limited. This represents our forward-looking vision anchored on three core pillars of innovation, impact, and intelligence. Our Affle 3i strategy is powered by the third eye, the augmented, authentic, actionable Affle intelligence embedded across our Affle 3i consumer platform stack. We envision to scale our impact exponentially, unlocking intelligent use cases for advertisers and expand our addressable market multiple times, while achieving hyper-contextual personalization for consumers and enhanced productivity for our teams. Over the last 7 years, since we filed our DRHP in 2018, we have achieved over 13x growth in both top-line and profitability and have delivered remarkable value creation for all our stakeholders. In FY 2025, we achieved revenue growth of 23% year-on-year, PAT growth of 28.5% year-on-year, and our CPCU revenue increased by 28.3% year-on-year. As global digital spend continues to rise, the shift towards performance-centric advertising is becoming even more pronounced, unlocking robust growth opportunity across all our key verticals and markets. With a solid foundation of over two decades behind us, we are aiming for 20%+ growth in FY 2026, and we will pursue a mid-term 10x growth target. In Q4 FY 2025, we exceeded our performance target and achieved our highest quarterly revenue run rate, highest EBITDA, PAT, and CPCU conversions to date. We delivered revenues of rupees 6,023 million, a growth of 19% year-on-year. Our focused execution on higher productivity and continuous innovation enabled us to achieve highest ever EBITDA of rupees 1,340 million and a record 289 basis points EBITDA margin expansion on a year-on-year basis. We also achieved highest ever PAT of rupees 1,031 million, a growth of 17.8% year-on-year. Our CPCU business delivered 104 million conversions at a CPCU rate of rupees 57.8, and we earned CPCU revenues of rupees 6,007 million, an increase of 19.2% year-on-year. It must be noted that Q3 is generally the highest quarter for advertising budgets, and Q4 typically sees a sequential dip of between 5 to 10% after the peak of the festive quarter. However, in Q4 FY 2024, we had an atypical quarter. We beat the seasonality trend for the first time. Now, viewed in this context of seasonality and atypical Q4 FY 2024, India and global emerging markets were resilient in Q4 FY 2025, and on an adjusted basis contributed 71.1% of our revenues in Q4 FY 2025, representing 15.9% year-on-year growth versus the atypical Q4 of FY2024. Our adjusted performance trend is along the sustainable 20% year-on-year growth trajectory across India and global emerging markets. In Q4 FY2025, we once again managed to beat the overall seasonality trend, and our overall performance was achieved with the outperformance in developed markets. On an adjusted basis, our developed markets outperformed and achieved 9.7% sequential growth in Q4 and contributed 28.9% of our revenues in Q4 25, representing 27.3% year-on-year growth. Our overall growth is accelerated, particularly through our aggressive sales efforts across all regions, resulting in consistent addition of new accounts and logos. Our consistent trajectory highlights the strength of our business model and the expanding relevance of our platforms as we penetrate deeper across high-growth verticals. We are unlocking new avenues of expansion across all markets and strengthening our position as a trusted, results-driven partner, operating locally across all key regions and closely aligned with the evolving needs of digital advertisers. We remain committed to investing in the next generation technologies that enhance the efficiency, efficacy of conversion-driven marketing while fortifying our AI-powered consumer platform stack. We are proud to have recently received a new patent grant in both US and India, marking our 13th patent grant to date, further enhancing our comprehensive tech IP portfolio. The patent titled Method and System for Application Installation and Detection of Fraud in Advertisement augments our fraud detection capabilities, underscores our dedication to delivering transparent, high-impact user conversions for advertisers globally. Additionally, we received another patent grant in India, which was already granted to us in the US before, for Method and System for Application Installation and Interaction during a podcast. This quarter, we have included three customer proof case studies in our presentation. The first case study highlights our unique AI-powered capabilities in scaling the acquisition of high lifetime value premium iOS users. The second case study highlights our success in making urban mobility more efficient in developed markets with use of hyper-relevant automated creative strategy to achieve high ROI. And the third case study focuses on the e-commerce and shopping vertical, enabling deep funnel conversions focused on repeat purchases in global emerging markets. Apple continues to be recognized as a tech thought leader in the industry, and we became the first company to present 100 live AI agents at the Bombay Stock Exchange on 8th April 2025, and we registered the adjudicated records for both the Asia and the India Book of Records. Further, our platform was recognized as a top growth partner for both Android and iOS across 10 categories and a top ROI-driving partner in Singular's ROI Index 2025, as well as we won multiple awards at E4M MarTech and at ET Brand Equity Digi Plus Awards. Lastly, and also as discussed last quarter, to strengthen our governance, we have been onboarding new independent directors progressively since last year as part of the planned transition for the directors completing their term in 2025. This process continued in the current board meeting with an approval to appoint two new independent directors. And thus, we have a total of 5 new independent directors added in the recent times. We remain steadfast in our commitment to uphold best-in-class governance practices and ensuring a strong, diverse, and independent board to guide our continued growth and the Apple 3i vision. With that, I now hand over the discussion to our CFO, Kapil Bhutani, to discuss the financials. Thank you, and over to you, Kapil.
Thank you, Anuj. Good morning, and hope all of you are keeping safe and well. We concluded financial year 2025 on a strong note, delivering an all-around performance with a robust growth in all 4 quarters. For the full year, on a consolidated basis, we achieved revenue of ₹22,663 million, representing 23.0% year-on-year increase. This was driven by broad-based momentum across key industry verticals across both India and international markets. In financial year 2025, our EBITDA stood at ₹4,832 million, registering 34.2% year-on-year growth with a margin of 21.3%. It demonstrated our continued focus on profitable and efficient growth. We achieved operating cash flow of ₹4,260 million, registering a strong 62.4% year-on-year growth. This significant increase reflects our strong operational execution and sustained focus on cash generation. We recorded PAT for the financial year 2025 at ₹3,819 million, an increase of 28.5% on year-on-year basis, despite an increase in our ETR. Speaking on quarter four, on consolidated basis, revenue stood at ₹6,023 million to register a robust year-on-year growth of 19%. This quarter, while we witnessed usual seasonality in India and emerging markets combined, we maintained our India revenue run rate broadly at par with what we achieved in quarter three on both standalone basis and on adjusted basis. We recorded a EBITDA of ₹1,340 million, an increase by a robust 36.7% year-on-year and 2% quarter-on-quarter. Our EBITDA margin improved to 22.2% of the revenues, up from 19.4% margin in quarter four last year. Coming to OPEX, for the quarter, our inventory and data cost was 60.6%, showing a marginal improvement over quarter four last year, driven by operational efficiency. Our employee cost increased by 1.3% sequentially, but declined 2.9% year-on-year. This was driven primarily by investment in past investments in the integrated teams and strategies, as well as adoption of intelligent automation and AI-supported workflows. These measures have contributed to more scalable operations and helped normalize human costs. Our expenses stood at 7.5% of our revenues and declined by 44.7 million on quarter-on-quarter basis. This was primarily driven by higher business promotion activities in quarter three, which saw a natural trend tapering in this quarter. We achieved profit before tax of ₹1,239 million during the quarter, an increase of 23.7% year-on-year. Our profit after tax stood at ₹1,031 million, marking an increase of 17.8% year-on-year and 2.8% on quarter-on-quarter. Our PAT margin improved to 16.6% of the total revenues, up from 16.4% in Q4 last year. We continue to prioritize efficient working capital management, and as such, there was no material change in our collection risk. Building on our proven track record of innovation and impactful execution, strengthened by our strategic initiative and robust financial position, we remain confident in our ability to capitalize on the emerging market opportunities. We are well positioned to sustain our strong business momentum through FY26 and beyond. With this, I end the presentation. Let's please open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets only while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a first question from the line of Anmol Garg from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Couple of questions. Firstly, Anuj, it's impressive to see that in a seasonally weak quarter, we have maintained similar revenue run rate as last quarter. So wanted to understand that what has led to the strong growth in the developed markets during the quarter. And secondly, you said that we can do 20% plus growth in FY26 as well. So would this be again more accelerated by developed markets, or do you think that both India and developed markets will grow in line? Thanks.
Thanks, Anmol, for your question. I think I did highlight in my commentary that, this is definitely something like it's atypical for a company focused on advertising to do at par or better in Q4 versus Q3. Now, we believe that our performance across India, global emerging markets, have been in line with the expectations. So there is some seasonality effect for sure. I mean, Diwali, New Year, Christmas, all of that in October, November, December definitely gives a boost to the consumer sentiment spending, and therefore the advertisers target a lot more budget there. But we are also not, we know that that is coming. So as an aggressive company, we're always trying to beat that trend. Now, in a 20-year history, the only time we managed to beat that was in FY 2024. This year, what we saw is that, we were actually not expecting to beat it, but we were obviously seeing some very positive trends of the momentum that we had built last year in terms of pushing for greater sales and greater opportunities in the North America region and developed markets in general. And we saw that momentum carry us through, not only with existing customers, but also in terms of winning new customers and continuing the growth momentum. And of course, the base in developed markets is relatively smaller for us. So it was easier to tide over the, pullback effect of the seasonality. Now, this is just one quarter, but when I say we look at it on an adjusted basis, India, global emerging markets, developed markets, and we try and understand our trends, normalizing it to, any anomalies or atypical behavior in the last year, we see that there is a consistent pattern that we can absolutely sustainably aim for 20% growth in FY 2026, and not calibrating it one way or the other in favor of, more in favor of developed markets or India emerging markets. We believe that in all our regions and verticals, we will be pushing for this kind of growth across the organization, and our plans and budgets for FY 2026 are made with that thesis in mind. So I don't want to balance in favor of one or the other. We want to see broad-based growth, and we are working hard towards that. We believe we can achieve it.
Understood. Anuj, just to clarify, this 20% growth is organic, right?
Oh, yes. We are, we may consider, selective and carefully picked acquisition targets through this year, but what we are talking about right now is organic.
Understood. And my second question is for Kapil. Wanted to understand that for FY 2025, we have seen a lot of rationalization in our employee expenses. Now, going ahead, do you think that we have still a tailwind from employee expenses, or we can get some leverage from the data and inventory cost as well?
So, as stated in the previous calls, also, we maintained that our expenses in FY 2024 were higher because of the investment in the human resource costs, and we have drawn efficiencies in the current year. Having said that, we also have been maintaining that the increase in human cost would be like a step ladder, right? Investing at times and then leveraging the efficiencies. So, yeah, that is, in the current year, we don't expect, feel like that there'll be a steep increase in the human resource cost. And we'll maintain the current level of expenses.
So, Kapil, would that mean that margins should be flattish for the year?
So we have been maintaining that we will be pushing for EBITDA margins increase by a few basis points every year.
Understood. Understood. Sure. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Deep Shah from B&K Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity. So the patents that we've announced, so if you could just help us explain a bit better on those. So we already had an MFaaS platform, and this one is also to do with some of the audit checks or the fraud checks. So if you could help us understand better what is this and how is it different, how does it help us, that would be useful.
Sure. Well, that's a great question, Deep. See, when we build our technology roadmaps, we always ring-fence it with patents and protection of our IP. right? So you rightly pointed out, we have the MFAS platform, which is our, you know, tool that is doing predictive analytics to catch any fraudulent behavior in the entire ecosystem. And we intend to do that rather diligently throughout, you know, throughout our history. We have been always working on that dimension. Now, this is an important aspect of technology, and therefore, many, many years ago, we had filed the patents to protect our IP in this area. And typically, you know, the patent process, the granting of the patents from filing to all the checks and balances that it goes through, it takes several years for a patent to be granted, especially in the US office and also in the India office, the patent office. So having won those patents now is a validation of the fact that A, that we have competitive moat, we have differentiated technology, we were early movers here, we were the first ones to conceptualize you know, these aspects of tech innovation, and therefore winning the patent in the US and the India market, two very important markets strategically for us, is a very important validation and also strengthening our intellectual property portfolio that we have. Does it mean that we'll suddenly start making more revenues, or whether we'll now start hiring lawyers and start charging all the ecosystem to say, hey, we had this patent, and start giving us royalties? I think it is premature to take that dimension at the moment, but I think it is very important to know that we have a very robust patent portfolio, about 36 unique patents, which hopefully will give us protection across various jurisdictions, and close to 45 plus patents across different jurisdictions. But in terms of the unique patents, we have got 13 granted already, 36 in total filed. And it should build confidence about our of our investors that, you know, these are all real innovations which are creating real intellectual property more for the company. I hope that answers the question. And it is just the timing of it. So when the conceptualization of the roadmap happens, there are a few dimensions to look at. There is, you know, product development. There is also intellectual property moat development, with patents being an important tool in that. Thank you.
Right. So thanks for the elaborate response. So generally, I don't know if maybe if you didn't give a quantifiable answer here, but generally in your experience, what has been that duration between, say, we conceptualizing something to a patent being granted to be able to monetize it in a way that puts us in a much superior position? Like, if you could maybe quantify this, if it's possible.
It is not something to be quantified. It is actually all working in tandem at all points in time. So while the product is there and the innovation is there, of course, the market and the customers recognize that, right? Because they see that, okay, no other competitor is supposedly bringing these kind of tools or capabilities or demonstrating it to the customer. So you start winning business and monetization advantage straight away. You start building a reputation for yourself straight away. Now, you know, filing a patent doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you will get it, right? So to get it eventually validates it and strengthens the market thought leadership position for the company, and that wins confidence of customers and their ability to trust us with their data, with their business, knowing that this is an honorable stakeholder in this ecosystem. And to the extent that this ecosystem has any, you know, areas that need to be cleaned up, then Apple and its technology as a, you know, responsible citizen in this ecosystem is bringing honor and appropriateness to how we conduct ourselves. Now, this will also help us as we go along in areas of data privacy or in AI. So building trust over two decades and building thought leadership with intellectual property and consistent innovation is what we are demonstrating. So how do I quantify that? A lot of our revenues here is because customers trust our company. Why do they trust our company? It's because of all of these credentials. And therefore, it's all in tandem, and it is always adding to the strength of the company.
Right, sir. This is very useful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Lokesh Manik from Valen Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Lokesh. Can you please be a little louder?
Yeah. Is it better now? Yeah, good morning to the team. Just a couple of clarifications. One is on the employee expense front. Although Kapil did mention that efficiency is coming from the previous year of investments, just wanted to understand that, you know, is it a part of the QIP and the preferential issue in the sense that had we not had these money raised, we would have expensed through the P&L rather than creating intangible assets. So the cost efficiencies that we are seeing of about 200 bits would not be maintained. This is just from a view to understand whether this is structured in nature that we can assume employee cost at 9-10% of sales going forward. That was one. Second was, I've observed that revenue from the core verticals, that is EMGH, they have gone up now from 90%. Today you're saying it is 100%. At the same time, there's been a fall in the non-CPCU revenue. So is there any correlation there? Are they connected?
Thanks, Lokesh, for your questions. Allow me to take them. Regarding employee expense, while Kapil did provide the insight that FY24 was higher due to the investments being made and, you know, the acquisitions being done, and in FY25, we had already given guidance that we will create strategic integrations and efficiencies across all our business units and making sure that, you know, we achieve that outcome. So what you're seeing now, FY24 versus 25, is an expected part. It has nothing to do with the QIP or preference issue or going through P&L or anything else. It was supposed to happen. It would have happened independent of any QIP or anything like that. Now, also I would like to mention that we are an organization that is an asset-light tech platform, scalable system organization. And in terms of using technology and technology automation for all our operations around the world is a, you know, absolutely important criteria for all the management of the organization. So using, you know, augmented, authentic, actionable intelligence, automation, embedding it across every role and every function of the company is something that we do with a lot of energy and focus, which will continue to see, you know, this kind of efficiencies unfolding. So we are talking about 20% growth in terms of our business, in terms of revenues and so on, but we are also saying that our costs will not increase in the same proportion because we don't need to have 20% more workforce in order to make 20% more revenue. It's a tech platform-based organization with a lot of automation backing it up. And this will continue to yield greater efficiencies on the bottom line as we go along. Regarding your question on EFGH and the non-CPCU business, since many years ago, even pre-IPO roadshows, I'd always maintained that the non-CPCU business is waiting to become CPCU business, right? So the non-CPCU business is now increasingly becoming CPCU business because those customers that were working with us on non-CPCU basis, we've gone back to them and said, look, this is our main line of business and we want you here. Even if somebody is doing, let's say, branding campaigns, we are still going to them and saying, let's make it more ROI-oriented, more performance-oriented and measurable. To the extent that we have been one of the first people in the market, especially in the U.S. and also in India and other emerging markets, to bring performance-linked, ROI-linked CTV advertising, connecting it to households, looking at connected devices with a unique perspective, right? So I think the emphasis here is strategic in nature, and having one clear sort of CPCU business, which is a consistent business. So any acquisitions that we are doing, anything that we are doing in our business, we are doubling down, tripling down on this business. We see a long, long runway for consistent growth here and a very large addressable market for many years to come. So, we're not trying to diversify or we're not trying to find another segment. We are saying, look, we are already diversified in the sense that the CPCU business across industry verticals, across geographies. So we are delivering broad-based growth and possibilities, but the CPCU business is where we are anchored.
Okay. Just last one, if I could squeeze in one. Netflix is talking about opening up their platform for performance. this advertising or for advertising in general. You know, we've done something similar with Amazon in Amazon India here. So are you targeting that account back to the, or will this be a competitive sensitive?
See, this is a very strong indicator of confidence that, you know, established businesses, content platforms like Netflix, where they have paying subscribers, after they have achieved a certain level of growth, they realize that the only way to get long-term consistent growth on their user numbers and revenues is to unlock the advertising based business model, which essentially means that instead of the user paying, let the user enjoy some content, but instead get an ad-funded model. This is again proving the robustness and the long-term resilience of our business model. Netflix, to us, in this scenario, would be a publisher, would be a partner with whom we'll be able to work with to say that, hey, we have a lot of advertisers, 75% of our revenue is direct from advertisers. And for those advertisers, maybe our platform could be buying certain impressions or clicks on Netflix by showing ads of our advertisers to the users of Netflix. So then Netflix would become a form of a publisher or an inventory source, which we can work with either directly by partnering with them or through other intermediaries in the ecosystem. So we see this as a positive dimension where we are going to see more unique inventory coming into the market and more possibilities to do consumer engagement to drive conversions. So this is actually all rather positive, and you know, we will cross the bridge one step at a time.
Understood. But are we in any discussions with them?
I think it's too early to comment. It would be fair to say that it will be a natural course of business. Either they will reach out to us, or we are already in discussions directly, or it is, you know, as long as they're doing any meaningful activity in the markets where we are present, I am absolutely sure there will be some form of business.
Great, great. That's it from my side. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. We have our next question from the line of Vijit Jain from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thank you. My first question is on, you know, these developments around antitrust ruling on Google. From a broader market perspective, would really appreciate your thoughts on how do you think this could change the ad industry in general if something comes out of it. That's my first question. And related to the developed markets, I suppose, I know you have, relatively small base in US, and it's also very domain specific, slightly more gaming centric than other industries in general. So how do you think, let's say, a mild recession scenario in US plays out for you, given your exposure to that market? Thank you. And then I'll just follow up with a quick question with Kapil. Thank you.
All right. Well, from a regulatory standpoint, antitrust ruling is just one dimension of the kind of rulings that, these large walled gardens are needing to deal with. You would see all kinds of clipping of wings, if I may call that, from the regulators to keep a check and balance on some of these large industry players who are dealing with a lot of data, they're dealing with a lot of, market share and their practices with respect to competition. I've always maintained that the ad tech industry has over-calibrated on the, level of spending that the advertisers are doing on the walled gardens, and I expect that to become more broad-based in favor of the non-Google, non-Meta, and non-walled garden, platforms as we go along, and as some of their competitive practices come under check through such rulings and regulations. So I would just keep it to that, and I would let time unfold and tell that. But on a broad basis, I'm very much clued in, and we are watching what's happening. And I think this is all working towards a fair outcome in the longer term for every player in the ecosystem, and eventual beneficiaries would be the consumers and the advertisers. With respect to your question on developed markets, I would like to address it by first and foremost clarifying that Apple is a unique company, different from most other listed ad tech companies. Why? Because they are deeply and heavily calibrated on the US market, and they are deeply calibrated on the gaming vertical. If you look at any of the ad tech companies historically, even, you know, any Indian ones that may have focused on North America as a big market, they become one-dimensional. North America, gaming. North America, gaming. All their talent is focused on that. Apple is unique. Apple is deeply focused on global emerging markets, of course, anchored out of the advantages we have derived from India, and therefore taking those advantages to other emerging markets, be it in Southeast Asia, Latin American markets, or, you know, Africa, Middle East, and all of these regions, we are taking that advantage and growing. Now, those advantages come in very, very competitively handy for us as we enter into developed markets. Now, we are broad-based in terms of verticals, right? We are not as heavily calibrated on gaming as the other competitors are, who are 80-90% gaming companies and now starting to think how should they do e-commerce or non-gaming verticals, whereas Apple has fundamentally been a broad-based focused on verticalization across EFGS categories. Even in the US right now, we are focused on gaming as well as non-gaming verticals for our customers, and fintech, e-commerce, and some of the case studies that we keep sharing consistently, you know, in our earnings reports already indicative of that. So we are fairly broad-based. Now, the US, as you know, is a very, very large addressable market, and we are clearly very small. So even, and we are differentiated, right, with our CPCU business model and bringing in certain unique experiences and capabilities from emerging markets, I think it makes us very, very competitive in that market. So given our base is small, the addressable market is very large, I don't think a recession in the US, which is again speculative, as and when it will happen, we'll navigate it. But when it happens, I think the advertisers there would be wanting to put their budgets to a CPCU performance ROI link business model. And we, with our smaller base, will go and fight out aggressively, selling hard to make sure that we continue to grow, even in a scenario where, you know, it leads to some kind of a recession. So I'm fairly optimistic, and I feel that we are in a very privileged position, given the way we have, you know, balanced our business across verticals and across geographies.
Got it. Thanks, Anush. Anush, just a follow-up on the India business. So if I look at the, I note the seasonality comment, and I can see that in the numbers as well on a QQ basis. But if I look at the India and EM business on a YOY basis, the last three quarters growth has somewhat slowed from, on a YOY basis, from 25% to 20 to now 16. So any comments on that? I know you've already guided to, you know, 20% plus the bot brace goes for FY26. But what is driving this deceleration in the last 2-3 quarters?
I wouldn't call it, I wouldn't see it as a deceleration, frankly. I mean, I'm very, very comfortable with the way our team is executing and the way the market is responding to us across India and emerging markets. And regarding 20%, it's always been, you know, consistent in the last few years in terms of our guidance. And even this quarter, 16%, I've already explained that last year Q4 was higher and it was atypical for it to be like that. So when we normalize it and adjust it and see what is happening in the market, we are actually finding that our growth trends are sustainable at 20% plus, and we should be anchored on that. And that's why I've given you all of that clarification. And where is it coming from? It's coming from existing customers. We have very good coverage of existing customers. There are also active selling and aggressive selling happening to new customers, opening, unlocking new use cases and innovations that we consistently bring to the market. So therefore, getting to 20%, I think, is a reasonable and real expectation.
Got it. Thanks, Raj. My last question, just on the other expenses side to Kapil, I guess. Last quarter, I think you did call out 3Q has seasonal business promotion spendings, and I think some of that came off in 4Q. But broadly speaking, if you could talk about what is the steady state for business promotion spends for you as you look ahead, and what that number was for FY25, because we obviously don't have the annual report yet, if you can share that. Thank you.
So you can take the current year expense and other income as the normal for us. For the full year basis, not on quarter to quarter basis, because seasonality and spending on the events happen at different times. The events in marketing does not happen on a quarterly basis on the same pace. They are spread out in different quarters. Generally, in quarter three, the marketing spends are higher. And yes, this was called out in the previous call also. And going forward also, we are saying we'll be looking at increasing the spends in the marketing side, but not to the tune of the increase in the revenue.
Right. So, Kapil, if I look at the... Sorry, please go ahead.
I said you should look at the expense items in on a full year basis. Because there's a seasonality in the spending also.
Right. So, Kapil, when I see the F24 numbers, right, I think business promotions was about 2.8% of revenue for F24. Could you share the number for F25, what this number was? That will give me a sense of how to think about that part.
See, basically our target is to spend about 3-3.5% on the upper side and 2% on the lower side for the marketing and promotion expenses.
Got it. Thank you so much. Those are my
questions. The broad range of how we plan for it.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Arun Prasad from Avendus Spark. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. Anuj, my question continues on this gaming vertical. So ever since we acquired UAP, the growth delivered by the EM markets have been higher than the developed markets is higher than the EM markets. So this kind of gives us a sense that gaming has played a huge role, which is what you have also acknowledged. But does it also mean that in the emerging markets, the gaming is either not such a big vertical, or we are yet to use the full might of the UAP platform in the emerging markets, and that gives us some kind of a growth potential going forward? Is it the right way to think about it?
Yes, it is the right way to think about it, that in developed markets, gaming is a much bigger, vertical versus in the emerging markets. That is definitely one of the ways to think about it. Having said that, in the developed markets, the non-gaming verticals are also very large addressable markets, and they are underserved because most of the incumbent players have gravitated to gaming because that is such a big vertical there that everybody starts fighting that battle and starts wanting to play that tournament with their best talents and capabilities. And I would say that the non-gaming verticals are underserved and a bit neglected by the incumbent competitors in the developed market. So when Apple goes into developed markets, we are seeing, you know, a better sort of competitive advantage for us when we go into non-gaming verticals. And of course, with the acquisition of UAP, we've got some more strength in gaming with them, and we have integrated that into our core propositions, and we are taking that to market rather aggressively in India, other global emerging markets, as well as in developed markets as one sort of integrated proposition focused on gaming. So I wouldn't... I would leave it to the market forces to define, but I think what I want you and our investors to focus on is that Apple as a platform is verticalized into many, many verticals classified in EFGS category. Gaming is one of our verticals. It is a very important vertical, and it is the most sort of competitively fought for vertical as far as developed markets are concerned and the incumbent players are concerned, who also are now starting to see how can they go beyond non-gaming, starting to, you know, calibrate their tech stack and algorithms for non-gaming, which I think is an advantage for us because we are naturally addressing it overall.
Any possibility that what is our exposure to the gaming vertical overall at this point of time?
I think we at this moment do not go and break the contribution of the categories of EHDS, but I would say it is fairly balanced. Categories E, F, and G are all, you know, reasonably balanced, and in category H, which is healthcare, hospitality, we are seeing, you know, it's catching up as well. But overall, I would say category E, F, and G are all strong and robust sort of categories or verticals for us.
On safe to assume gaming will be our largest vertical?
Say that again, please.
Safe to assume that gaming will be our largest vertical among all these?
I think it would be almost at par with category E, which is e-commerce, entertainment, education, and category G would be almost at par with that.
Right.
I think it will be hard to say. In some quarters, that would, you know, one would be more than the other, but it is all fairly broad-based and balanced out. We are not over-calibrating one way or the other, but we are definitely pushing hard. Now, you know, things could change as we push harder in developed markets and we could win some really large customers in gaming and numbers could change. I mean, developed markets can create that, you know, kind of imbalance potentially. But, you know, at the moment, the way we execute, we are having sales teams which are focused on different customer accounts and verticals. And so we do see a broad-based growth coming along. But it is possible, you know, we are going forward, see some really massive wins and sudden upsides, but we will talk about it when that happens.
Secondly, on the business development, business development events once again. I'm sure that we are attending all the events globally, and there are only finite number of events. So I'm just curious why our BD expense as a percentage of revenue should be continues to be pegged to the revenue. I would assume at some point of time it will flatten out. Just help us understand how to think about it.
Sure. There are many ways in which business development happens. So events are not only industry events that we attend, but also create industry events of our own in key markets, right? Where we work with partners, curate our own events and call certain customers and so on. So the format of business development has evolved from doing 1-to-1 selling and knocking at people's offices and doing meetings. That also happens. But I think the industry has evolved over time to, you know, curate events where there are multiple speakers, customers, and there is a big, like, there's a forum so that people are looking for either traveling into for that event for a day or two and so on and so forth. So industry events is one. Doing our own events is another dimension. Doing events for a select group of customers, not everything would become like public. So there are private events and then there are events which are industry, everybody knows about it, and then there are private events that we are doing in smaller forums. So it is something that we would like to peg it closer to the revenue, because this is a tool that we give to all our regions and sales heads and the general managers for each of the markets to achieve the revenue, right? We're pushing them to go and sell more and get existing customers, new customers into these events and create the right forums to establish not just winning of business, but also establishing thought leadership of what we are doing going forward.
Okay, understood. My one bookkeeping question to Kapil. Kapil, if you see our net working capital in FY25 has largely remained flat as compared to 24, despite revenue growing 23%. Is there any one-off or we can safely assume that this is the way forward where our working capital requirements will continue to be on a decreasing on a day's basis?
Still hold our own position that we require a 30-day working capital, though we are working at say, about 10 days working capital at the moment. But yes, our business modeling is at 30 days model, but we continue to exceed our performance on the cash management and client management. And we hope to do that going forward also.
So what happened in 25 where we had some exceptional performance on the working capital side?
So there was the better days have reduced on certain clients, and we have been able to negotiate better terms with the paying side.
Okay. So that will be
sir. May we please request you to rejoin
sure.
you. Thank you very much. We have our next question from the line of Rahul Jain from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. My line is
yes, Rahul, can you speak a little louder?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. My first question is, with web traffic moving away to AI tools instead of mobile desktop browsers, will that impact us in some manner near term?
Sorry, can you clarify? Traffic is moving from mobile to?
AI tools.
All right. Well, I think at the moment, if you look at the overall ecosystem, I would say there's a tremendous amount of increase in devices, connected devices expected globally. So, you know, today our reach is over 3 billion connected devices. We are aiming for realistically looking at how that will reach to about 10 billion connected devices over the course of the this decade. And we see that there's a huge amount of human traffic increase, right, in terms of amount of time that is being spent online. And that goes to, of course, you know, went from the browser and search to app stores and apps to now there's another dimension of AI tools related traffic. Now we are already having quite a number of patents as well as innovative use cases on how our use cases are evolving with intelligent use cases, not only using AI tools to serve our business more efficiently and better, but also to see how we are integrating the experience where you're dealing with a consumer directly, you're dealing with an AI agent of the consumer. For example, I believe that going forward, all of us would have a, just like you have a personal email ID, you have a professional email ID, similarly, you'll have a personal AI agent and you have a professional AI agent which is work related. And we will be dealing with all of these kind of interfaces. One is direct to the consumer, another is dealing with the AI agent of the consumer and making sure that these engagements lead to monetizable conversions eventually, because the, let's assume that the eventual consumer has a conversion of, you know, or a transaction with an advertiser has to happen with an eventual consumer. But there is going to be another authenticated AI agent of the consumer who will be making certain decisions. For example, in your household, your fridge might decide to buy groceries, you know, based on a certain pattern that you may assign to it. We have use cases that we're building towards that. It's not necessarily an issue of supply or inventory. I think it is an issue of how do we attribute conversions which may happen from authenticated AI agents acting on behalf of the consumer. And when that is established, you know, I believe that the use cases that we already envisaging, envisioning, trying and building and testing in our products will keep us in good stead. But the ecosystem is evolving. But, you know, if you are just looking at modeling our business, the first thing to model is how many connected devices will increase in the ecosystem? Will that lead to more volume and more value of conversions happening online on mobile? And if the answer to all of that is yes, we believe that we will have an increasing growth rate with advertiser spends for conversion growing on our platform. And we will be finding a way to make sure that we navigate not only direct to consumer conversions, but also driving conversions through their AI agents. And at all points in time, one of the earlier conversations about, you know, these fraud detection, identity detection, it is going to be very important because we will also have a lot of fraudulent AI agents and tools out there. So, you know, all the IP that we have built around fraud detection and management will become even more relevant. So the need for a tech stack like the Apple 3i consumer platform tech stack will only increase for the ecosystem, because the ecosystem will have more complexities to deal with, both on the good use cases where you have not only the human traffic but authenticated, credible, you know, human assigned agents acting on their behalf, a kind of traffic. But you will also have a lot of fraudulent AI kind of traffic as well, and therefore a tool and a platform which is automated to deal with all of these complex scenarios is going to become even more essential for the advertisers than it is today. So I'm feeling pretty safe about the moat and the relevance of what we are building going forward, and we'll deal with these use cases competently.
Right, right. Thank you. I understand the potential and all that. Basically, just to
slightly clarify if the answer changes accordingly, was that ki, as the traffic moved from a browser to mobility, similarly, when it moves from within mobility to AI, does the ecosystem on the ad exchange or backend would change? If that does not change, then I can understand your situation. And secondly, on the optics AI, how much of that we have, as you explained in your event, how much savings it's bringing on the content creation side, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much for asking those questions again. We think that most of the AI traffic will happen on mobile, okay, at the moment, right? The other devices, other connected devices, wearables, or other embedded chips and so on, I think it will still, you know, take 5 years to become mainstream. For now, a lot of the AI traffic would still be on mobile, and therefore the fundamentals of that engagement should be seen as an authenticated AI traffic on behalf of the consumer should be treated as no different from the consumer itself. So that's how we see it at the moment. And so I see no major sort of disruption on how we will measure conversions attributed back to that consumer, whether it is through their AI agent or directly by them. I think that conversion attribution will eventually go back to the consumer. So I don't see any fundamental change there. With respect to optics AI, well, we as a company have always been receiving creatives from the advertisers, right? So we don't go and start making, I don't know, video ads, or we don't start making banner ads. We receive creatives based on the brand assets of the advertisers. And what we do to them is to enhance them, augment them, authenticate them, ensure that those creatives are working, you know, are being targeted to the right users at the right time. And if we find that some of the creatives are working well in one consumer segment context, but it's not working well in another, then we would work with the advertisers in the past, and the cycle of going back to them, giving them feedback that your creative is not okay, can we have better creatives, can we have more creatives, that has now become automated with Optics AI. So the brand has to give us very little. And with that very little that the brand tells us, with some of the creatives that they give us, with Optics AI, we can create many, many more creatives that are contextually hyper-personalized to the consumer segments that we are reaching out to, right? So whether it is vernacular personalization or it is other forms of cultural, contextual, personalization, that is what Optics AI is doing. So there was no cost to us at the beginning, and now when we run Optics AI, again, it is a fairly scaled tech platform, and the incremental cost to our tech infrastructure is not dramatic. I mean, we are doing it efficiently, and it is part of doing the business, and the ROI on, you know, how we run the conversion link campaigns justify running it as part of our data and inventory costs. So it is not going to change the dynamics dramatically, but it will help to improve the performance and the value perception of our platform to the advertisers, as well as the personalized, hyper-contextual personalization to consumers will make advertising appear more like engaging content and recommendations to the consumers versus annoying ads.
Got it. Thanks for the colors. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to the time limitation, we request you to stick to two questions only. I repeat, due to time constraint, please limit yourself to only two questions. We have our next participant from the line of Samarth Patel from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for providing me the opportunity. My first question is, how has the mix between new customer acquisition versus retargeting has evolved, especially in like India emerging market and developed market this financial year?
Well, thanks for that question. When we run our business as a consumer platform for driving conversions, we look at, you know, each conversion and the value of that conversion. And our goal is to make sure that our advertisers are appreciating the value of the conversion, therefore paying us. Now, typically the conversion cycle works. Of course, the user might do a first conversion with an advertiser. But essentially, if you look at the case study that we shared, you know, we emphasized today in one of the case studies that we are saying we're looking for high lifetime value consumers, conversions for the advertiser. Now, what does that mean? when we get a conversion for an advertiser, they would not only say, okay, what was the value of the transaction that happened? What was the conversion? They're seeing what kind of a user, what kind of a consumer has Apple brought to them. If it is an iPhone user, which has a higher lifetime value, the willingness to pay goes up. If it is a high-value iPhone user, they're also looking at how many repeat transactions can they get from that user to, you know, quantify that lifetime value. Now, how does Apple earn its money? We are charging per conversion, right? Whether it's the first conversion or the repeat conversion, we are charging for each conversion along the way. And we are going to the advertiser and justifying, hey, look, we brought you this consumer. If it is a first-time conversion, we, you know, work out the story in a certain way. If it is a repeat conversion, we are telling you, hey, we are defending because there's such a competitive market, and whether it's e-commerce or entertainment, all the consumers are, they're not loyal to just one app or customer, you know, advertiser that they work with. They are working with two or three. I'm pretty sure on your device, you are having all the e-commerce apps, you have all the entertainment apps. So even though you are an existing customer to that advertiser, they are constantly conscious that they may lose you to a competitor. You can buy from you know, an e-commerce site A or a B. So therefore, when we don't create a massive distinction here with respect to balancing it out. And in our case, you know, we have driven close to 400 million conversions in the last financial year, right? Now, I would say it's a fair balance of about 50-50% when I see it from the advertiser's lens, where how many are new conversions versus how many are repeat conversions. But as far as we are concerned as a platform, all of those 400 million conversions, chances are that we have already done some conversion with those users in the previous year or during the course of the year for either an advertiser A or a B. So a lot of it is repeat conversions as far as our platform is concerned, whether it is from one advertiser to another. I hope I have not given you an overly complex answer, but from an advertiser's lens, I would say that in emerging markets, there's still much more pushing for new user acquisition. And in developed markets, I think the balance is, you know, a lot of times in favor of repeat engagements of the existing customers. So it depends on the maturity level of the advertiser and how much are they spending for new market share versus defending their existing base of customers.
Thank you very much, Anush, for that flavor. That is really helpful. My second question is, if you can help contextualize the 4Q growth across India, emerging market, ex of India, and developed market, and what would you attribute as the biggest driver in each of this region?
You're asking only about Q4 or for the full year?
Yeah, for quarter four. Okay.
In Q4, I would say in developed markets, we saw broad-based growth coming from existing customers, new user acquisition, repeat. I mean, across the board, it was, you know, good execution and momentum, right? We're carrying through the momentum of what we had done throughout for the last 1.5-2 years. In emerging markets, I think most of the emerging markets, we saw the seasonality trend where, hey, the budgets have been, especially in LATAM, typically you would find in Brazil and these markets, October, November, December, across businesses, not only advertising businesses, across businesses, October, November, December is massive. And then Jan, Feb, March is generally the lowest quarter for the whole year. All right. And this is quite consistent in Latin America. In Southeast Asia and in India, we found it more resilient. We could push for at least, you know, there were seasonality trends, but because we're also selling to new customers and we're also finding more growth, right? We're not just dependent upon the customers that we had in October, November, December. So, yes, existing customers would have seen seasonality, but we were pushing for new customer sales and therefore getting more. So, in India, we were able to neutralize the impact. In other emerging markets, we saw that even selling to new customers in Jan, Feb, March was harder because they just somehow all exhausted by having done a lot in October, November, December, or is just maybe it's a cultural thing. In developed markets, we saw consistent momentum leading to great growth, beating the seasonality trend. So that's how the results came. And overall, we're happy that we had a second consecutive year where Q4 is at least at par with Q3. And this is, as the CEO of the company and as an industry experienced entrepreneur, this is not normal. All right, this is actually very good. But I'm sensitizing you for your modeling going forward. Please always keep the seasonality impact from Q3 to Q4. That is prudent. That's the right thing to do. And that's how we do our business planning. If we beat it, that's great. But we don't expect to beat it generally.
That is really helpful. Anuj, thanks for picking up my questions.
Thank you. We have a last question for today from the line of Deepak from Sundaram Mutual Funds. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Am I audible?
Yes, Deepak.
Yeah. So I just had one question. So since, you know, Apple is a cash generating company and right now we have more than 1300 crore worth of cash in our balance sheet, I just wanted to understand, means how do we plan to, let's say, utilize this in the next year or in the next 1 or 2 years? Do we expect any kind of buybacks, or it would be more linked to, you know, any acquisitive opportunity that you might see so that you won't want to save it for those purposes? Just some flavor on the capital deployment.
Thanks, Deepak, for that question. We are an aggressive, growth-oriented company which is looking for sensible, consistent, long-term growth, and that's very, very clear to us. Every asset of the company, whether it's an intellectual asset or a financial asset, will be deployed to its fullest capacity to maximize sensible, long-term, profitable, cash flow positive growth. I'm super proud that our company, you know, in my commentary, I only commented on, you know, the P&L metrics. But I think my CFO commented also on the cash flow metrics. And seeing over 60% growth in cash flow from operations versus previous year is something to be deeply proud of. And I really think that our company is doing exceptionally well, not only with, of course, deploying the cash towards, you know, greater growth in the business, but also through the business that we are doing, we are a very disciplined unit about how we generate cash. And I think that is, you know, it's beyond any accounting standards, you know, like cash is cash, right? I mean, there's only one way to report it because it exists. And I think that is super important to drive home. And your question is valid. At the moment, we are looking to deploy every single asset of the company, cash included, towards delivering greater growth because we are on a 10x growth plan in the medium term. And we would be working really hard and making every asset of ours work really hard to achieve that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions from the participants, I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Well, thank you very much. And this is a very meaningful year for us because it's our first year of the third decade. And the last month was, you know, very special. It was the first month of our third decade. And I want to assure you that we have put in a tremendous amount of energy to propel ourselves towards the 10x growth that we are eyeing for in the medium term. And we are strengthening the foundations of the company like never before. We are building greater sense of pride, purpose, and ensuring that the entire organization is aligned towards this this goal and believing in that every step of the way. So with that, stay tuned, and we look forward to your continued support and to the next earnings call. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. On behalf of DAM Capital, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.